That's Jim Cole. That's the guy who James Taylor tries to emulate. Sounds a whole lot like each other, don't they? Jim Cole, I Can Trust in You. And it's 10 minutes after the hour here on A Broken Road Radio Tuesday morning. Dr. Don joins us. Don Clark, biochemist and a member of the board at Creation Moments. And he's comes to us from down in Garden Valley, Texas, where the sun is shining. We've already learned that much today. Don, good morning.
Well, good morning. And how is it? How's the weather there?
Well, I looked at the sunrise. Actually, I was up before the sunrise. There's just that glow on in the eastern horizon, but you could see that the skies were crystal clear and the moon was just shining. And now I don't know how you tell one morning star from another. You know, I can't look up there and see a light and say, "Oh, that's Saturn," or "That's Venus." Mars, I could probably pick out because it's got kind of a red flicker color, you know.
But is it on the no-fly list?
And Jupiter is easy to find.
Well, why? Because it's big.
It's big. It's
okay.
Big. Well, and it doesn't flicker. It stays.
Okay. Well, stays constant. I'd say it was Jupiter I was looking at this morning, but it sure was pretty. A couple other stars or planets or something. See, I don't know much about what I'm looking at. Oh, there's a twinkle. That must be a star. I say.
Oh, that must be a star.
Yeah. Got to figure it out here. Yeah.
You never did learn your constellations.
Well, I know a few of the constellations. Yeah, I can pick out the Big Dipper, and there I can find the North Star. I can see. I know Orion when I see him swing around. Can see that up here. That's just and I can pick out the Pleiades, the little cluster of seven sisters they call them, seven little stars up there.
And you know where the Big Dipper is.
I know, and the little one I can.
And the Little Dipper in the North Star.
Yeah. Do you know who named the star cluster Pleiades?
Was his name Pleiades?
No.
No, the old Greek guy. I figured. No.
Ed Pleiades.
Mm-hmm. No, God did. God did. It's actually in the Bible.
Oh, really? Tell me more about
that. It's in Job.
Uh-huh.
I believe. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
Because as God is talking to Job and saying, "Did you do this? Did you do that? You know, did you? You know,
yeah, have you done this? Have you? Can you
have
do
you
what
considered,
I do?
You know, Pleiades and
okay.
So it's interesting. You know, where a lot of these, you know, names, common names for things that we just take for granted, where they actually come from.
Yeah. You figure some scientist spotted it and named it after his sister or something, but you know. but they were studying the skies a long time ago, weren't they? And they knew, they could see the patterns, they could predict, they developed calendars from watching the stars rotate around, didn't they?
Well, absolutely, and that's of course the Hebrew calendar, you know, has a lot to do with the moon and as well as other. You know, civilizations, other groups of people use obviously the astronomical signs in the sky as times of the year as to, you know, when to do this or when to do that. And the feast were linked to certain events as well.
Yeah, that reminds me, David, we should play Ben and Phineas again sometime soon, shouldn't we? Remember doing Ben and Phineas, right?
When we first went back in the dark ages.
We did a skit and about two guys who watched the skies and made all kinds of wild conclusions out of it and ended up in the calendar business.
So, the, one of the nights when we were in Africa, we were on a safari and out in the middle of nowhere, and we drove off during the day, but we were out in the middle of the night. It was a clear night, beautiful night. And they turned all the lights on the trucks off. And we looked up at the sky, and there was nothing that I recognized up there. I mean, billions of stars, but everything's upside down. And most of the constellations aren't there. I mean, you could see one of the stars in the Big Dipper.
Is that the Southern Hemisphere?
That's in the Southern Hemisphere.
All right, it's a different side.
Everything was radically, radically different. I'd never seen the Southern Cross before, and all sorts of different constellations. But interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's something when you get away from the city. So many people now are blinded by all the artificial light around. Them. They don't get to see that anymore.
Yeah, the other part of it too. Pitch black. Couldn't see a thing.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the nice things about Minnesota, Don, is in the winter there's just typically not dust around at all. I mean, it's all frozen, you know. It's buried under the snow. So you look at the winter sky, particularly particularly when it's very cold, for some reason, and you just the stars are just splendiferous. They're just gorgeous up there, and a reminder of how little you are and how big he is. It's a healthy thing to see. Something else that reminds me of that is history, and we're going to get into a discussion this morning with Dr. Don about Chinese pictographs. Now, Don, what is a pictograph? It's not a letter of the alphabet exactly, is it?
Oh, it's not alphabetic at all. It's actually I would describe it as a kind of a condensed picture of something. Mm-hmm. So if you were, for example, if you were, you know, to draw, you know, an animal or something, and you'd probably do a fairly good job of outlining, you know, the animal. And if it was a moose, for example, you might put some antlers on it, and, you know, you would have the tale about that. But then if you... let's say you wanted to, you know, create a word for the moose, then you would probably start to abbreviate, you know, some of that.
So create a symbol, in other words.
Yeah, you would create a symbol
that stands for the moose. Yeah,
from the actual picture that you made from the moose. So you might choose, for example, just to draw one antler, and that would then, you know, symbolize the moose.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting that we do have people groups that use pictographs and still use pictographs in their language and in their writing. The Chinese being the most prominent, obviously, one has to ask the question, where did these pictographs come from, and what do they symbolize? And the Chinese is obviously it's not a language that we can just pick up and read, because we don't understand the basics of the language, and we don't understand the little symbols that are put together into a word, which are made up of many different strokes.
Mm-hmm. So they're really clusters of these symbols, then.
Well, then they start. So you might have a symbol, let's say, for, as we were talking about, a moose or something.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And so you would have that symbol, and then maybe you would have another symbol, you know, for a warrior, which might be a spear, and then you might have another symbol for dinner, which could be. Mm-hmm. The spear and the moose tied together. So you would have, you know, one stroke for the spear, and then a couple of strokes for your moose, and there you go. You got dinner.
So the word would then mean moose casserole, for example.
Yep, mm-hmm. That's right. That you killed that boar moose.
Mm-hmm. And I would suspect, I would
venture for fire that put it all together.
I would venture that pictographs are much older than alphabet letters, aren't they?
Oh, much. Well, that's an interesting question, because you have ancient Hebrew, which is interesting, because it's kind of made up of strokes if you look at Hebrew, so you wonder if the Chinese people might have forgotten ancient Hebrew, or a beginning of a written language. And tried to start their own with these pictographs.
Well, each of the Hebrew letters has a name, which does not relate to a thing. It's just a name for the letters, like A and B and C.
And it also has a number, so it's a special type. It's like Greek, actually. Greek is both the letters in the Greek alphabet also represent numbers. Same thing for Hebrew. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, the
and of course Roman letters, too.
Yeah, and the letters in the Hebrew, you know, alphabet aren't symbolic necessarily like the Chinese pictographs are, Chinese characters. So it's a totally different form of written communication than any type of alphabetic, phonetic type of based, written language like English or you know, Hebrew mm-hmm. or Greek or, you know, Russian and all this, all these other, you know, European derived languages. But we can get, interestingly enough, from the Chinese pictographs, you can begin to ask the question, well, where did these come from and how long ago, you know, were they put together? Well, we know that the Chinese migrated over to the, you know, over to Asia, over to the, you know, Chinese area thousands of years ago. You know, Chinese civilization is quite old, and as a matter of fact, over 4,000 years old, which is an interesting point in itself, because you're saying, wow, you know, 4,000 years, we should, that should kind of ring a bell and say, are these direct descendants from those that, you know, came after the flood, pretty immediately after the flood, and more importantly, after the dispersion at the Tower of Babel? Mm-hmm. And, of course, the answer to that is yes. And so do we find evidence in their pictographs for such things?
Yeah, can we look at those and trace the original pictographs, somehow connect them with Middle Eastern concepts?
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. And so there is, you know, there have been studies, and they're more almost forensic in nature, because mm-hmm. you have to go back to the basic symbols in the pictographs and kind of take take the pictograph apart and say, well, what do the individual parts mean, and does it make any sense with the corresponding word? Mm-hmm. For example, let me just give you one example. There are many, many examples, and books have been written on it, and it tells a nice story. It tells the creation story, actually, but just one pictograph for the word that means to create. It's actually composed of two other components, which is walk and talk. Hmm. The talk is actually composed of other symbols, actually three symbols, a little stroke that means living, and then four strokes that mean dust, and then a square that means man. So you've got a walking, living dust, which is man, which is exactly the creation story, mm-hmm. you know, for man. Now, is that just a coincidence, or were they actually remembering the creation story when they started to write these things down? Now, mm-hmm. obviously, it's got to be the latter, and it ties very, very nice to, the Genesis story. And, another example, is garden, which is made up of dust, and it's made up of our square, which means man or breath, it's made up of a person and another symbol for person. So it's like you've got a male person and a female person, all locked up in a garden, but they had the breath of life, and they were made of dust. Or at least the first one was made of dust.
Yeah, this is so uncanny here, yeah.
Is that just a, just a coincidence? Or is it actually representing what the people came when they moved east from, when they moved to the Far East, for example, mm-hmm. from the Tower of Babel? They carried these stories with them. And so it validates, if you will, the story, because, okay, this is, it actually points back to some very ancient history in the life of man, if you will, and it links directly to obviously the Garden of Eden in the description in Genesis, where God made Adam first from the dust and he breathed life into him. And then out of Adam came Eve. So Eve is not made with the out of dust, but actually out of man. This is amazing.
There's an interesting explanation for these symbols that we're talking. I just put a link in the chat window on our homepage. So if you're listening and you're interested, you can click on that, and it'll take you to the article we're talking about, where each of the pictograms is broken into its respective component parts with an English explanation under each part, so you can see how these are put together. And it's fascinating, really. Just think of this, how a symbol, which would be interpreted now as a word, contains biblical history. I mean, this or any kind of history, that it's put together with, that tells a story all by itself.
Well, that's right, and it's there's multiple characters. Mm-hmm. For example, the character of a boat they've got a vessel, and then added to that, that you would say, okay, that's the end of the story. It should be just a vessel. That's what a boat is. Mm-hmm. But it goes further than that, in that they add the symbol for eight. Mm-hmm. And also the symbol for mouth, or it's this square again, which is man, or breath. And so you have eight people with mouths. You have essentially eight people on a vessel, which obviously these folks who were creating these symbols knew about the flood, and if they had migrated from the Tower of Babel, they would have had intimate knowledge of the flood, mm-hmm. and that eight people were saved, in the flood out of on the ark, for example, and that then becomes part of their of their written language.
So the pictogram that means boat tells the flood story, or at least a large chunk of it, and records it for posterity. And I'm wondering if modern Chinese folk look at this and just see the word boat, or if they can understand the individual parts, or you have to be an expert, maybe you have to have studied this to know that. I wonder. Do you know?
Well, it's an interesting question, because in this article they give an example of a Chinese man who was asking a Christian, he says, why should I believe? Why should I believe in your Bible? Why should I believe in your God? We don't have the Bible. We don't have any written, information that would suggest that anything that you're saying is true. And fortunately, the fellow had studied these Chinese characters, and he said, "Well, okay, let's just take the word for boat as we just described, and what is that composed of?" And so the guy kind of drew it out, and he wrote it, and he said, "Well, this one represents a vessel, and this one represents eight, and this one represents mouth." And he says, "Okay, well, there you go. Why eight? Why eight, and why is there a mouth representing, man?" And the fellow was flabbergasted, because he had never seen this, before. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Well, that's just a coincidence." And he said, "Well, okay, let's look at the word flood." Well, flood has the characters for water, and then there's another character for total. So even there, it's interesting, because even there, the word for flood, you would think, well, okay, the Genesis flood was only a local flood. Their word for flood is water and it's total. So it was a total flood. It was total water. But the word for total, for example, has the character for together, another symbol for earth, and then the eight again. Mm-hmm. So you've got, together there were eight people that were saved out of this total water, which was the flood, and that makes up their word for flood. So it's not a coincidence that the eight was there, and it's actually telling telling the Genesis story that's described between, you know, Genesis 6 and Genesis 9. Mm-hmm. So it's, I mean, these symbols are these characters, for example, pictographs in the Chinese language are very, 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 very interesting. And you know, we've only you know, kind of scratched the surface of the meanings that are there, that are hidden in inside the pictographs, and the pictographs themselves become a an easy way to witness to someone with a Chinese background who you know, knows these symbols because they've used them. They've had to grow up and learn the basic strokes, and the basic strokes, of course, you know, have meanings which they've learned. So it's not you know, it's not that difficult. I mean, they've modernized, you know, a lot of these things, so you have to go back to the ancient pictographs. But when you do, the creation story falls out, the flood falls out, you know, the early history of man is written in these pictographs.
And I wonder how instrumental this may have been in fomenting and in starting and spurring on the growth of the Christian church in China, because that's quite a story in itself.
Absolutely. And, you know, if Paul, for example, had the or anyone who went east had the knowledge of this, or saw these characters and then started to describe them and saying, you know, I have the completed story here. And then they start, you know, start talking about this. It wouldn't have been hard at all to have them, you know, accept Christ, for example, as the Savior, because he's even written in the language. And so the word for goodness involves a woman and a seed. Sacrifice is made, is represented by God, hand, and blood. Lord is designated by God and blood.
My goodness. You know,
Me plus sheep equals righteousness. Trust and dependence is represented by God covering a couple with clothing. I mean, it should be easy to witness to Chinese folks and with you know, with all of the information. So you go with a Bible, and you go with you know, a concordance, if you will, of the early Chinese language, and you should be able to convince anyone that, hey, the history that is written in Genesis is indeed history. It's man's history, and that was carried over with the early peoples that came over to China and started, you know, to write these things down in their own way as pictographs.
I think I may have discovered a new hobby here. You know, this fascinates me, and I'm wondering, and this may be beyond the scope of what we can talk about today in terms of our preparation, but I wonder if other systems of pictograms from other cultures would behave similarly. You know, maybe African cave paintings or Eastern Europe, or because if it all started from Babel, and that the spread of humanity commenced within 100 years or so of the flood, and that can be calculated by looking at Genesis, and all these pictograms go back to the same place, there should be some commonality between them, I would think.
Now, Egyptian hieroglyphs are pictograms or pictographs. I'm not sure if they all are. You know, I was just looking at. I've been looking at.
It feels so ignorant here.
Wikipedia, you know, while we're talking, yeah. And there's only about 600 pictograms in the Chinese language, or what is? I mean, the Chinese language is many things. There's all kinds of systems within, and there's only 600 of them that are pictograms. And they're called oracle bones that were designed or were scratched out or written on the backs of turtle shells. in the 16th and 11th century BC. So they predate, in many cases, well, the individual stones predate, but the combined pictograms that we're talking about now must have come about later. And they were a combination of the older bones that were put together, mm-hmm. as new ways of looking at or describing things.
Mm-hmm. And that's not uncommon for a language. Mm-hmm. If we're even our language, we make up new words today out of a combination of base words. To represent represent a new thing that we made, like an automobile, for example, so to combine characters like this, to combine pictograms, would be a natural thing as the society began to advance and to have the need to communicate in a more condensed, more condensed manner.
Well, this is fascinating. For those of you who may have just joined us, we're talking with Dr. Don Clark, the biochemist, the only biochemist we have on staff here at Broken Road Radio, and member of the Board of Creation Moments. We're talking about Chinese pictograms and picking them apart and deciphering the meanings of the individual parts, that is, which, a pictogram is a cluster of symbols. And if you'd like to see what we're looking at, head over to the BrokenRoadRadio.com website, and our chat window has a link to it. It's right at the bottom of the chat window now. You can click on that and see these same pictograms and read about them and do your own analysis. But this is just astounding to me. This is really interesting. And now I'd love to get into some other systems of pictograms and see if we can find similar roots in those, and of course the Egyptian would be one, and I got to tell you, I this looks like Oriental script to me. So I think of the Japanese, and I think of the Chinese, and I think of the Koreans, where it all has a similar feel and look, which suggests mm-hmm. common origins, by the way. But to think that you break them apart and you get the Middle East is just astounding to me. You get biblical history, you get Genesis written all over these things.
Well, and that's the history that they knew, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so they knew about the flood, they knew about the creation, they knew about the devil, because mm-hmm. they have the word for temptation, for example, is represented by garden, trees, and devil. So it's you can't get around that. Hey, they had some biblical knowledge before the even Bible, mm-hmm. before the Bible was even written, so to speak. Except that the earlier chapters of Genesis may have been written by some of Adam's descendants. Mm-hmm. So this is it is amazing, and we. I'm sure other people have looked at some of those other pictograms and said, "Okay, do we find this in other other people groups?" Mm-hmm. I'm not aware of any of that. Of course, the Chinese language is probably the most well researched. But if there are any symbols like this, in other languages, I'm sure people have written books about it.
Yeah, and I wonder how many missionaries may have been aware of this, had this knowledge with them as they headed east. And that goes back to the Dominicans, the Benedictines, the early church orders of monks that traveled the world. And, of course, accelerated in the 19th century, where missionaries were all over China. And a lot of that was spurred by the economic development, the British and the Germans and the Americans competing for commerce over there. And the drug wars, and it's a very complex history, but to have this come out of it is just no less than astounding. And I've got to think that some of the missionaries had to have been aware of this early on. This can't be a recent discovery.
Well, if they weren't aware of it, they would have been aware of it relatively soon, because mm-hmm. the missionaries would have tried to understand the language And they would have sat down with somebody and, you know, said, well, what does this mean? And how does this break apart? Mm-hmm. And as can you imagine being immersed in that culture? And you have obviously awareness of biblical history, and you go over there and you discover, wow, you know, this means this and this means mm-hmm. that. And then you begin to show the people that are teaching you this pictographic language what this means and how this relates back to the message that you were bringing them. I mean, that would be extremely exciting, I would think.
It would be, just to realize that the same biblical culture holds you, it ties you together with what may have seemed at first an exotic and foreign kind of environment. Now you have common threads, and that's an amazing thing. The article is at the Institute for Creation Research, and it can lead you to a lot of other interesting articles there as well. And that's one place that we go to often when we're looking for scientific evidence of a young Earth creation, because it exists out there. And a lot of the information at the ICR, that's icr.org is their website, is well presented, scientific, logically based. It's rational, and it avoids all the emotional arguments that you get into when you talk about evolution and faith and science and so forth. And it's one of the things we delight in when we have Dr. Don visiting us. Another place you can go is the Creation Moments website. That's another great resource for you. If you're at all interested in seeing the unemotional, the logical, again, the rational evidence for a young Earth and for creation, creationmoments.com is the website. And we're familiar with it here. There's a link to it on our website, brokenroadradio.com. Again, there's a Creation Moments kind of an icon or symbol over on the right-hand page. You click on that, that'll take you right directly to Creation Moments. And we encourage you to do that and discover what's there. There are DVDs and books galore. There's blogs and articles and comments and people there that you can share information with. And just an outstanding organization, Creation Moments. And creationmoments.com is the website. Don, it's been good. This is fascinating.
Well, it is. It's obviously far afield from biology and biochemistry.
Yeah, it is.
But it is fascinating nonetheless. I mean, that's the thing about human history. Whether you're trying to dissect a cell, for example, and look inside and finding the wonders of creation, you actually even find it in language. And the farther back you go, the more astounding it gets.
Yeah, there's another page at the Institute for Creation Research, which is comprised of 2-minute videos, 2 minutes or less, on various topics. They're very instructive, and that's how we found the clues to the pictograph story. And we'll post that along with our podcast with Dr. Don here a little bit later this morning on brokenroadradio.com. Don, have a great week. It's been good to have you along, and we'll see you next Tuesday, okay?
Okay, been great being here again, and you folks have a great week as well.
Yeah, it's good to see sunshine down in Texas again.
Good to see you, Don.
Bye-bye. Okay, so long.
Bye-bye.
Bye.